Hi there. I'm your host, Lisa Shield. Welcome to Dating Without Drama, where I give you my unique take on everything related to men, love, dating, and romantic relationships. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. All right. Well, it's a pleasure to be back. And today I'm going to talk about something that I know is a big topic for a lot of you, and that's developing a secure attachment style. Many of us, whether it's because of our parenting or it's because of a bad relationship, something happened along the way that really broke our spirit or caused us to mistrust other people, the opposite sex, we develop over time what is called an insecure attachment style. And attachment theory is becoming more and more popular. More and more people know about it. I feel that it's almost impossible to date successfully and choose a partner and have a truly wonderful relationship if you do not have some understanding of attachment theory. I think that this is absolutely essential to being able to go out into the dating world and pick a partner. So in my 12-week emotionally naked dating course, this is one of the key pieces of what I teach in the course. In the first month of my course, we dive deep into attachment theory. There is a wonderful book that I recommend that everybody read. The book is called Attached, and the author is Amir Levine. There's actually two authors, but the one I remember all the time is Amir Levine. And it's really important that you understand attachment theory, because you are going to have to sit across from someone on a date. And first and foremost, you are going to have to be able to control your own anxiety or your desire to withdraw. You know, when you get some people, when they start to get close or get attached to someone else in an intimate relationship, some people become very anxious and some people push away. So some people get very anxious when intimacy or attachment starts to occur in a romantic relationship, and some people start to pull away because out of fear, right? So typically, by and large, women tend to be more anxious, although there are avoidant women. I'm one of them. I was very avoidant, but usually women tend to be more anxious, and men often are avoidant. Now, it can be switched, but those would be predominant, right, for each one of the sexes. One of the reasons we're taught not to pursue men is because women get very anxious, we get very controlling, and we push men away. Another reason that it's not great to be anxious, besides the fact that it just sucks to do that in a relationship, is that when we're anxious, we tend to attract the wrong men. So anxious and avoidant people are attracted to each other. It's really hard, if you're anxious or avoidant, to have a relationship with a secure person, because a secure person isn't going to hook into that energy. Someone who's secure, like me, like I am now, if I met somebody who I identified as anxious or avoidant, I would walk away so fast that person wouldn't know what happened, right? And I would be able to identify very quickly what that person's attachment style was. Now, many of you will say, well, you know, how do I tell? How can I tell if a man is emotionally available and I'm going on a date? How do I know that? Well, attachment theory gives us a lot of insight into that subject. It gives you, if you read the book Attached and you start to really apply what you learn in this book to yourself and to the men that you're dating, it really gives you profound insight into how to go on a date and how you need to show up and how to gauge how this other person is showing up. So let's talk a little bit about anxious and avoidant attachment. What do these look like? Does anybody who's listening right now know what your attachment style is? If anybody has taken the attachment quiz, in fact, there is a wonderful quiz in the book Attached that you can take that can help you determine your attachment style. And you can also do it for a former partner to figure out what your former partner's attachment style was. This is really important. Now, when my clients in my 12-week program, when they do their work in week 3 of my course, one of the things that we do is we do a very long inventory where we look at every relationship my clients have been in. And part of that inventory or that history is to look at the attachment styles, what your attachment style was in that relationship and what your former partner's attachment style was. This is very important because you start to see repeating patterns in doing that. You will start to see, wow, I was anxious in almost all of my former relationships. And wow, look at that. My boyfriends were all avoidant. Or maybe if you were avoidant, you will see that you attracted some secure or some, you know, anxious men. So it's very, very important to start to look at not only who the guys you're currently dating, what their attachment styles might be, but also to know the attachment styles of your former partners. This is very important, and to identify what your attachment style was in that relationship. Something else that's very important, to look at the attachment styles of your parents. This is key because our parents have a huge influence over who we choose as partners and how we show up in our relationships. This is key. So in my course, we put all of these pieces of the puzzle together. And putting this puzzle together is life-changing because most of us never do this work. We're operating blind. We're going on dates and we're just hoping for chemistry. We have a list of criteria that we want in a partner, but we have no idea how to even assess if this person is anxious, avoidant, or secure. Now, there are other iterations of attachment styles. There are anxious, avoidant people as well, but mostly people tend to be anxious, avoidant, or secure. Let's talk about what it looks like to be an anxious attacher. Any anxious attachers listening right now? Because I'm sure you know who you are. When the intimacy starts to build, when you really like somebody, what happens? You start to spiral out of control. You start to question everything. You second guess things. Does he like me? Doesn't he like me? Why didn't he text me? You know, why did he look over at that waitress that way? You start to second guess and analyze everything. You start to feel insecure. If he calls, if he doesn't call, if there's a day or two that go by where you don't get any texts, you start to go ballistic. Maybe you even start texting him like a mad woman, or you start calling all your girlfriends and you start overanalyzing and overthinking things. And then you start to have what are called protest behaviors. You start to act out in ways that are not even normal for you. You can be a high-powered businesswoman and you can be in control of a whole team of people. And then suddenly, here's some guy that you like and you're going ballistic. And you start doing what are called protest behaviors. You start to question him and sabotage and, you know, second guess things. And that starts to cause the guy to pull away. Have you ever been around somebody who's super anxious? Because if you have been, your natural inclination is to want to distance yourself from that person. Why? Because they feel super needy. It is very uncomfortable to be in a relationship with someone who is anxious. And a lot of times people who have high anxiety are also codependent. They need a tremendous amount of reassurance in order to feel safe in the relationship. He should be texting me more. Why isn't he asking me out? I need to know when the date is. He asked me out for Friday and it's Wednesday and I haven't heard from him. And you start to have all these rules and all these things that, you know, he should be doing this so that I can feel less anxious in the relationship. And you start asking him, can you text me in the morning? Can you do this? Can you do that? And all of those things are attempts on your part to get the guy to try to make you feel less anxious. All of that is going to drive men away. And I'm sure many of you have experienced that. It's unattractive. It feels awful for you. And it's also uncomfortable for the guy on the other side, especially if he is a secure guy and he really is interested in getting to know you and you're questioning him and second guessing things. Men will pick up on this anxiety. They will pick up on it. Trust me, you can do everything on your end to try to hide it, but men can see it from a mile away. So let's talk about avoidant behavior. Lisa said that she's avoidant. She's an avoidant in recovery. I love that. So let's talk about people who have an avoidant attachment style. Lisa wrote that I just had my first brief phone conversation with a man I met on Bumble, and he already said he wants to build a long-term relationship with me. We don't even know each other. Ugh. Lisa, that's a great example of what? What would that be? Anxious or avoidant? I'm going to guess that he's avoidant. So what happens with avoidance? Well, this is the tricky part about this. Avoidance come on hard and fast and strong. They come on hard and fast and strong. These are the guys that sweep you away. They do something called love bombing. So avoidance will come at you like nobody's business, and they will tell you everything you want to hear. They will, you know, you want to have kids. Oh my God, I want to have kids. Do you want to get married? Hell yeah. Like, I'm just looking for my wife. I can't wait. And then they will start telling you, oh my God, I've never felt this way about anybody. I think I may have found my person. But they do something called love bombing. They come on so strong and they're telling you so many wonderful things, but things that have no basis in reality. They don't know you yet. They haven't even gotten to know you. But for a lot of us, especially for women who are hungry for this kind of attention, or people who are hungry for that kind of attention, people who are looking for these explosive fireworks and these like off the charts relationships, they eat this stuff up. It's like giving candy to a baby or food to a starving person. It's absolutely insane. But a lot of us fall victim to it because we've seen way too many Disney movies or love stories, and we think that this is how it's supposed to be. We think that we're just going to meet our person and it's going to be kismet, and we're going to feel like the two most special people in the world. And trust me, if it feels too good to be true, it is. But what happens is, and this is the really sad part about avoidant behavior, is that when a man or a woman is avoidant, what happens is in the very beginning, they tell you, they're just totally into you. They tell you everything you have been waiting and wanting to hear. And then as soon as you start to attach, as soon as you start to believe this person and think, wow, maybe this is my person. Maybe this is real. And you make a decision, you start to decide that you want to go for it. They start to pull away. They start to distance themselves. Suddenly, this person who was so into you and thought he'd met the love of his life grows cold. And this can happen very quickly. They can go from hot to cold in a flash. And what's really painful for many of us who have been in these kinds of relationships is that we don't really know what happened. And if we are sincere about what we've been saying and doing, then we start to blame ourselves. We start to think, what did I do? He was so into me. There's a fabulous book that was written probably over 20 years ago. It's called Men Who Can't Love. And if you've ever been with an avoidant, this book is the most brilliant description of avoidant behavior that you've ever seen. It is just textbook, the way the author describes this. The author is Stephen Carter. It's just unbelievable how accurate this is. So I was dating a guy right before I met my husband, Benjamin. I had been at a party about a year earlier, and I met this man, and it was at a Halloween party, and he spent the entire evening talking to me. And then somewhere probably an hour and a half into talking, you know, just being mesmerized and captivated by me, his girlfriend walks up and she is pissed, and she grabs him and she pulls him away. And that was that. A year later, he reached out to me and he said, I don't know if you remember me from Ted and Peggy's party, but, you know, I met you and I know that you import from Mexico. He was a set designer, a set decorator in the film industry. And he said, I'm doing a project and I need to do something that's Mexican and I wanted to talk to you. Well, he was really trying to get me on a date. So we went out. And very, very handsome man. We had both been students of Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements. So I was so excited to go on this date with this really handsome guy. And I thought it was so romantic that he remembered me from the year before. And he called me a year later. And we had this wildly romantic date. You know, one of these dates that my clients come back and tell me about. And we made out in my car. I didn't want the passion to end. And, you know, I went home, and the next day I came home from work and there was this enormous bouquet of flowers outside my door. I mean, I still don't know to this day if I've ever gotten a bigger bouquet of flowers. And there was a card that was with the flowers. And he had delivered the flowers himself. It looked like he hand wrote the card. And the card was two little kids in the ocean, like right at the edge of the ocean in the water, laughing at the camera. And I opened it up and the inscription on the inside of the card was, I waited my entire life for you. Waited, W-A-D-E-D, waited my entire life for you. And we've gone on one date, folks, one date. I really want you to get that. So I waited my entire life for you. Okay. Well, I love romance as much as the next person, but okay. And then I decided to proceed with caution. I had already been doing a lot of work on myself, but he was hot and I wanted to see where it would go. And we had a lot in common. So I decided to go for it. Why not? Right. And in the first week, it was magical. Like, he introduced me to his kids and he was going out to see his mother who lived in Palm Springs. And we drove out, we spent some time with his mom. And then he was going away with his kids. They would go to Castaic Lake every year to go camping. And he asked if I would watch his cats. And, you know, that's a big clue right there. Any guy who has cats, I'm suspicious of. But anyway, so he gave me the keys to his apartment and asked me if I would watch his cats while he was away. Well, I found out that while he was away, he had gone with a female friend. Now, I don't know if she had kids. I can't remember. But he said, oh, no, I've known her for years. But he didn't tell me until after the fact. It was kind of weird. So there you go. But on the first date, he had said to me, on the very first date, get this, he said, you know, I have 2 tickets to anywhere in the world. Where would you like to go? And I was like, wow, you know, I haven't traveled with a guy in a long time. I've traveled the world by myself, but I haven't gone with a guy. That would be a blast. And here he's offering me 2 tickets. And I was up for it. I thought, what the heck? Why not? And so we started planning a trip to London and Paris. And I said to him at some point, I said, well, have you looked into your frequent flyer miles? And on the phone, he snapped at me. And he said, you didn't expect me to pay for everything, did you? And I felt blindsided, right? Like he had offered these tickets. We were going on this trip because he had suggested this. I wouldn't be going otherwise. And I certainly, you know, I didn't expect him to pay for everything, but we were going because of him. He had got, you know, he had suggested this. And so I said to him, I didn't want to react. I was working very, very hard not to be reactive because I had, you know, been very like a trigger finger in the past. And I didn't think men found that attractive. So I very quickly said to him, oh, you know what? I have something I have to take care of. Let me call you right back. Put the phone down. And I sat with myself and I said, Lisa, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right. Here's this guy. It was his suggestion. And now he's accusing you of wanting to pay for everything. So I thought to my, and I thought, but you know, I haven't traveled with a guy in years since my ex-husband. It would be so wonderful to go away with somebody that I'm excited about. And I'm going to do it. I said, I know it's a risk, but I'm going to go ahead and go for it. So I called him back and I said, look, I never expected you to pay for everything, but we're doing this because you offered that you had these frequent flyer miles and that you would get the tickets. And I said, if I'm going to go away, I'm going to go to Vietnam because I was importing from Vietnam. I said, you know, that I can write that off. It's a business expense. And if you want to join me on a business trip, that's fine. But, you know, and he said, well, I decided to take my kids to Italy. And I said, that's fine if you had a change of heart or whatever, but you needed to let me know that. And so we wound up going to Vietnam and Cambodia. And I have to say that I'm really, really grateful that we went to Cambodia because I got to see Cambodia at a time when it was not overrun with tourists. It had really just started to open up and it was magical. I mean, Cambodia itself was magical, but the part of the trip with him was abominable. And he actually said to me, I will never forget, he said, have you ever really felt deeply connected to someone? And I said, well, of course I have. And he said, I never have. And that right there was my sign. I mean, there were lots and lots of signs, but that really jumped out to me. And I said, there's something wrong with this man. I didn't know about attachment theory. Attached hadn't even been written, but I knew that there was something seriously wrong with a man who's admitting to me that he has never really felt a deep attachment to anyone. And it just went downhill from there. He would be walking around as if he was on his own vacation and I wasn't even there. He paid almost no attention to me. I mean, it was a nightmare. And we came back and I think I saw him one time when we came back. I was at his house and I was going to stay over. And we were, you know, we were talking about something and he blew up at me and he said, you're just like my father. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. He said, you're so condescending. And I was like, okay, this is not cool. I got up, I went to, you know, I went into the bedroom and I laid down to go to sleep. And he came in, he turns on the TV and he lays down next to me like this with his arms folded. He's watching TV. I'm sitting in bed. I'm in bed next to him. And I'm thinking, if this is 6 weeks, I don't want to see 6 months or 6 years. I waited for him to fall asleep. And the minute I thought he was asleep, I grabbed my stuff and I hightailed it out of there. I went home. And this is the part I really want you all to hear because this was really, for me, it was a real turning point in my whole anxious avoidant dating dynamic. So I never felt like I have never felt like I was a better version of me than I was in that relationship ever, because I really kept my cool. I didn't get bent out of shape. I wasn't an emotional wreck. I dealt with my own emotions. I didn't, you know, get messy with him and whatever. I just walked through it. I observed, paid attention, and I got myself out of it faster than I've ever gotten myself out of anything before, cleanly and clearly, with a clear conscience. So this was the kicker. The next morning he called me and he said, "You left in the middle of the night." And I said, "Yeah, I did." And he said, "Well, I wanted to talk to you before I end this." And I'm thinking, well, I'm the one who left, but you know, I was done being right. And I just figured, whatever. And I said, "Sure, what did you want to tell me?" He starts to do a character assassination of me. "You're arrogant, you're this, you're that, whatever." You know, he starts going down. It's as if he had written a list of this stuff. And I don't know, it felt like he went on for 10 minutes, just telling me all the things that were wrong with me. Normally in the past, I would have gotten so upset. I would have been hurt. I would have been indignant. How can you say that? You know, and I would have also gotten upset with him. You know, I would have started poking at him and throwing insults at him. "How can you say that? You're such a jerk," and whatever. I just sat there and listened. When he was all done, I said to him, "Wow, you don't like me." And he said, "Well, what are you going to do about this?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to be in a relationship with someone who clearly doesn't like me." Now, I had no script for this. I had no idea what I was going to say. But I was like, "I don't want to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't like me." And he said, "Well, are you going to talk to somebody about this?" Like, he's provoking me and trying to hook me into a fight. And I said, "You know what I'm going to do is," I said, "I'm certainly open to feedback, but if someone's going to give me feedback, I feel it should be delivered in a productive way." And I just said, "You know, I'm going to hang up the phone now." And I said, "I just want to wish you the best." And I hung up the phone. A few days later, I got another email with more stuff. You know, he had more time to think about it, more stuff he didn't like about me. I didn't respond. And a few days later, he wrote me and he said, "I always feel remorseful afterward," which tells, you know, means that he's done this before. And then he said, "I just wanted to tell you that you're a shining star and you're on your path and keep doing what you're doing." And I wrote him back and I said, you know, by that time I had read Men Who Can't Love and it described his behavior to the T. And I understood at a deeper level what was really going on there and why it was so powerful that I had gotten myself out of it. Because it can be very hard to extricate yourself from these kinds of relationships. They're very, very, very hooky because there's a lot of emotional ups and downs. And we get hooked into the drama because it's exciting and it's, you know, emotional. And so I wrote him back. I said, "Thank you for that email, because it's not often that you get such blatant confirmation that you're doing the right thing. So I really appreciate you saying that. But I do want to be honest with you and tell you that being in a relationship with you was wretched." And I'd never used the word wretched before. It was the first for me. But I said, "Being in a relationship with you was wretched." And I said, "You really need help. Like, this is hurtful behavior." And I suggested that he read Men Who Can't Love. And I just, that was it. And then I got another email from him again, you know, just saying, "I was journaling and I was thinking about you." And I didn't respond to that. And I put myself back online. And a couple months later, I met my husband, Benjamin, who I've been with for now 19 years. And that's where I broke this pattern. Now, in the past, I've been both anxious and avoidant in relationships. And, you know, the topic of tonight's discussion is, well, how do you develop a secure attachment style? How do you do that? How do you get to a place where you can be like I was in the face of these insults and this, you know, severe avoidant behavior? Because I'm going to tell you, he was the handsomest and most successful man I had ever dated up until that point. He was great looking and he had a really wonderful job. And we knew a lot of people in common through our work with Don Miguel. So, you know, there were a lot of reasons for me to be impressed by this guy and really be hooked in. I had never dated anybody on paper with his qualifications. But here was the beautiful thing. I had recognized, now I had never read Attached at the time, and I didn't know that I had this anxious avoidant attachment style, but the men who liked me and showed interest in me, I wasn't interested in them. I found them boring. I didn't want to, you know, they weren't interesting to me, and they weren't interesting because they didn't feel like a challenge. The ones who I really liked, I would get anxious. I would go ballistic. I was a nutcase. I would obsess over them. I remember nights sitting and drinking and smoking cigarettes and like obsessing over why hasn't he called me? And, you know, we've slept together and I can't believe that he's not calling me again and what's going on and whatever, wanting to chase after guys. And so I really did exhibit both behaviors in the extreme. And I started to look at this and I said to myself, I said, Lisa, you have to stop looking for reasons to run away or push men away. And you have to look for reasons to stay. You've got to start to learn how to have both feet in. And I made an agreement with myself that if I was going to get into a relationship with someone, that there was no more of this sort of one foot in, one foot out, poised to run at any moment. I was going to put both feet in. What did that look like? Well, it looked like me talking about things, being able to go to a man and say, look, this is what came up for me. And I need to have a discussion with you about this. It meant that I would start to open up and not just have these, make these unilateral decisions and, you know, and decide, yeah, this isn't going to work. And then I would just leave and pull away, or this guy's boring or whatever. I started to learn how to take down my emotional walls. Now, I'll tell you something about taking down your emotional walls. When you do it in the right way with the right man, it's actually sexy and it's very exciting. But the difference is it's exciting in a very real way. It's not exciting in this fake way, like, oh my God, look at us and let's have sex and let's rush into something and let's be chaotic and let's be unconscious. There is something very sexy about entering into relationship consciously and maturely and walking through our fears of intimacy and letting someone see who we are. Now, what's really titillating about that is that in some ways, it's about you being willing to open up to a man, taking down your walls, allowing this man to see you and then sit back and see if he wants to continue to get to know you. And this is very vulnerable, but vulnerability is sexy and it's real and it's exciting if you do it in the right way. If you really do it in the right way, it's hot. So, you know, it may be really letting a guy know that you're into him. Showing enthusiasm, expressing your interest in him, and not just sitting back and waiting for the guy to pursue you. One of the things I remember when I met Benjamin that was really hot, but very, I surprised myself. We were in Catalina. I had bought us a trip for Christmas, or I took the two of us to Catalina, which isn't very far from LA, by the way, but we went to Catalina as part of his Christmas present. And we got to Catalina and we were standing in the bathroom together and we were brushing our teeth. And this was just a few months after really meeting him. And it was such a normal moment, like standing there with this handsome man brushing our teeth and whatever. And it felt like we had been together for a lifetime. It just felt so relaxed and real and whatever. And I just looked at him and I said, you know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. Now talk about vulnerable, right? Talk about a vulnerable thing to say. And we hadn't talked about marriage. I mean, none of that. And Benjamin looked at me. Now, he could have said any one of a million things, right? I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. And he looked at me and he said, you better. And that was an exciting, emotionally naked moment. That's real vulnerability. And that's really hot. That's what we're all looking for. But most of us are waiting for him to create it or circumstance to make it happen or whatever. But really what's exciting is having both feet in a relationship and being willing to take that kind of leap, that kind of risk, and then seeing what happens. Benjamin could have said, yeah, I don't think so. Or he could have finished brushing his teeth and said nothing. But he said, you better. And that to me, from the man that I had grown to trust and really feel connected to and feel love for, that was the hottest thing of all. And it was a leap that I took. There were many, many times in the course of our getting to know each other where I really opened up to him. And even with the man before him, I talked to him about what was going on. I said, you know, I didn't think that you would pay for everything, but you did bring up the tickets and I was expecting you to get those. So I spoke up for myself. And that was new behavior for me. Right? That was new behavior. I didn't just stuff it or throw, you know, or pull away or get upset or just not call him back or call my girlfriends and say, oh my God, what do I do or whatever. I just decided that, okay, I'm going to be a mature, grown-up woman about this and I'm going to talk about this. So that's what it looked like. And I thought, you know, this is weird. This isn't good behavior on his part. But what I decided to do so that I could shift my attachment style from anxious and avoidant to secure was I decided that when I saw somebody doing something that didn't feel right to me, I wouldn't just run away or throw a fit or interrogate him. I would put it in a little mental file. I would just file it. You know, wow, that was a strange experience. Let's see if this keeps happening. Let's see if he keeps doing more of this. And then I would put that in that mental file and I would watch that file grow, right? I didn't need to talk about every little thing. I didn't need to call him out or make a big deal about every little thing. In fact, I know that men don't want to be badgered and they don't want to be lectured. And so I came up with something that I called the one conversation rule. The one conversation rule meant that I had one opportunity to discuss something with a man. One. If there was something I didn't like, if there was something going on, I would say, hey, something happened, and I'd bring it up and I'd have that conversation and I'd tell him what I thought and I'd give him, you know, I'd be open and give him a chance to explain his side and then never brought it up again. I would just see if he said, yeah, I'll look at that or I'll change that or, you know, I get where you're coming from or sure, I can do this. Then I'd sit back and see, did he follow through? Did I like his answer? But I didn't sit there and keep going over and over and over things. And so little by little, I learned how to navigate relationship. I learned how to get emotionally naked. I learned how to process my own emotional upsets before I talked to a man. And slowly, I transitioned into a secure dater, into a woman who was capable of being in a relationship, talking to a man, asking for what I wanted and needed. And it actually has become very simple. In fact, here's the beautiful thing about this. The more secure I have become and the more secure you all become, the quicker you'll be able to identify people who are anxious or avoidant when they sit down across from you. You will be able to see through those games because you don't want to engage in that kind of behavior. You also know that you've done it yourself, right? You've been down that road. You know what it looks like. And so you can spot it because you've been there. And by doing this work on yourself to become secure, you start to become more attracted to and attractive to other secure people. And that's the beauty of doing this work, because ultimately, what we're all looking for is not something that starts out way up here and the only way it can go is down. What we're looking for is something that starts out here and can go up, can build on something real, and where we create a strong foundation underneath it, a foundation of emotional nakedness and honesty, and two people who are in it, who have both feet in for the long run, who know how to be true partners and can sit down and talk about something and not have any drama or games or push each other away. One of the things I know most people say, well, they're, you know, all relationships have conflict. And that's something that I'm here to say, no, they don't. All relationships don't have conflict, and all relationships don't have to have conflict. That isn't true when there's no resistance, when you're not fighting to be right or digging your heels in or getting defensive when your partner shares something with you that may be unpleasant. If you're mature enough and if you're secure enough, you can take that information in and receive it because you know it comes from love. You can welcome that kind of feedback and not have to run away from it, and know that you can listen to your partner and that your partner will listen to you. And when you do that, there is no conflict because you don't have two people resisting each other. Conflict comes from resistance. It comes from me needing or feeling like I need to defend or explain myself to my partner. If something went wrong, I don't need to explain myself to Benjamin. He knows who I am. He knows where my heart is. He knows I would never intentionally say or do anything to hurt him. And if I have, it's only because I missed something. So this is really an extraordinary thing to become, to evolve yourself into a securely attached person. If anybody has any questions, I'm certainly open. Catherine said, my ex keeps coming over at least once a month to help me with a repair on my house or just to take me out. I've been telling him he doesn't need to come over, and he says he wants to, though. I've noticed he has been saying lately, what am I going to do for him? I told him we are not in a relationship. He said, everyone you talk to is in a relationship. Then he says, am I just a taker or am I a giver? And if it makes me mad that he is saying that, then that is my answer. Catherine, this is just so highly manipulative. It's so highly manipulative. And you have a right to put a stop to that behavior. You don't have to engage in this. You don't have to let him come over. You don't have to respond to him. You don't have, you know, you can block his number. If this keeps happening, it's also partly because you're engaging in the behavior and allowing it to happen. And you need to ask yourself, why? Why do you do that? And then why do you let him gaslight you that way? Because that's an example of gaslighting. He's doing this and then he's turning it all back around on you. And that's what's called gaslighting. So you have to ask yourself, why are you putting up with this? Why are you letting him do that? I don't know, but that's something for you to answer. You're not being mean. You're not being a bitch. If you draw a clear line and he doesn't respect it, and then it keeps going on, it's because you're allowing it to happen. So you've got to make a boundary there and cut this guy off and not look back, because otherwise he's the avoidant and you're the anxious one and you're playing into this because you're getting something out of it. So yeah, I would cut him off. Any other questions? Oh my goodness. Yesterday, I had a 3.5 hour call with my graduates who have done my emotionally naked dating course. 3.5 hours. I thought by the end of it, I don't even know how my tongue was working at the end of that call. It was so incredible. But yeah, it was really amazing to see all the beautiful women who have done my course. And yeah, on the Q&A call, there were some women who have found love, right? They're in loving, beautiful relationships because they followed the path that I've laid out for them, my emotionally naked dating path. So for anybody who wants to know more about the work I do and how I can help you, please go to lisashield.com. You can click on the button there and you can watch my 45-minute presentation. It's really eye-opening. Juliana says, if a relationship has moved faster than I would be comfortable with, or if the dater is asking for steps forward that I'm not ready for yet, do you believe there is a way to backtrack? Juliana, I don't know 100%, and I don't want you to share that on a face, you know, here because this is a public platform, but I don't know if you're talking about, I'm just going to say hypothetically, if this is including sex, it is, you know, it can be very, very difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube. So that can be very difficult if it's gotten sexual too quickly. It's kind of hard to dial that back, but you can certainly say to the guy, you know, I feel like we got ahead of ourselves and I really need to hit the pause button. I've rushed into things too quickly in the past. And I'm looking for something lasting. And so he will have to decide if he's willing to wait and not keep pushing that agenda. But, you know, if it's something along those lines, then yes, it's a tough thing to do. But I would suggest that you just let him know, hey, I'm as guilty as you are. We both rush too quickly. But I do really want to say that I am looking for something meaningful. I want to create an emotionally intimate relationship. And I don't feel good about rushing too quickly. And we need to slow it down. Are you okay with that? And if he's not, then he is not your guy. So any man who is truly into you is going to let you set the pace on that. And I would definitely put up a boundary and then see what he does. Okay. Yeah. And we're all guilty of, you know, rushing in too quickly in one way or another. So, you know, just put it out there and just see, because that will be a telltale sign if he's really into you or not. All right. Please, if you're listening, give me a thumbs up or a heart. Let me know that you enjoyed this talk so I know I'm on the right track. And I'll answer Joan's question really quickly. How do you know that you're being emotionally naked? Well, genuine emotional nakedness is uncomfortable. You know, it should feel honest and real. It's usually a little uncomfortable. You're saying something to someone that is a risk. One of the most emotionally naked things we can say to someone is, I love you. You're important to me. I miss you. I care about you. I want to spend my life with you. Or asking for something that you truly need and want in the relationship where he may say no, you know, where you're risking and he might say no. I can't give that to you, you know, asking for a commitment. That's being emotionally naked, saying I've really developed feelings for you and I'm not wanting to date other people and I would love to take down our profiles and just see each other. What do you think about that? That would be emotional nakedness, you know, asking for something that feels risky and vulnerable, or sharing something about your past that you feel that he could judge you for. That's also being emotionally naked, something that about a former marriage or a former partner or whatever. Though all of those things are risky. They're things that we don't just talk about with anybody. They're not things that we say to just anyone. So that's emotional nakedness. Okay. I have to run. I actually am talking to a couple. I haven't done any couples work in years, but this is an old client who came back to me who I really loved. So I said I would talk to him and his new girlfriend or his fiance. So I send love to you all. Again, please give me a thumbs up or a heart if you enjoyed this talk. If you have any suggestions of any topics that you would like to, for me to speak on, please send your suggestions. Always looking for suggestions from you because I want these conversations to be relevant to you. That's why I do them. All right, everybody, gotta run. Go check out my presentation and let's jump on a call if you want to learn more about what I do. And if you want to just find true love for the rest of your life and get this solved, that's what I can help you do. All right. Bye-bye.